the Betfair Exchange. More ways to bet, more ways to win. Proud sponsors of the Final Furlong podcast.
The Final Furlong podcast is proudly brought to you by attheraces.com, the ultimate online resource for racing fans.
For only the seventh time in the nation's history, our Taoiseach, our Prime Minister, Leo Varadkar, made a special address to the nation. In that, it was expected that he was going to announce a complete and total lockdown of Ireland. Thankfully, he didn't, but he did say that we are stronger together for now apart. And that's just kind of the situation that we find ourselves in this bizarre world of COVID-19. I hope you're okay, and thank you very much for joining us on the Final Furlong podcast. I'm your host, Emmett Kennedy, alongside Mr. Rory DeLargy.
Hello.
An enthusiastic hello from Rory DeLargy as well. And making his second appearance on the show from the Weekender, the Racing Post Weekender, it is a very warm welcome back to the show to Mr. James Norris.
Hi, Emmett. Thanks for having me back.
Great to have you back, my friend. And it's also great that we actually have racing on as well. Obviously, since we last spoke to you, racing is now gone from the UK. Cancelled in France, although there is upbeat news from the French. They may be coming back to racing sooner than thought. American racing continues. Maidan will go ahead behind closed doors, so we'll be previewing Dubai World Cup night on Thursday with Barry Faulkner and with Peter Fornatale. And we've got Irish racing behind closed doors as well. And Rory, there's been a lot of talk about this, but the fact that our Taoiseach gave that historic address to the nation, and then the very next day the HRI said we are going to continue racing. He was making the point, the Taoiseach, that they're learning from what's happened in other countries. Joseph O'Brien has been one of the people who's been very, very vocal about the fact that racing needs to continue and that we've proved that we can do that now behind closed doors. So are you comfortable with what Ireland are doing?
I'm not entirely comfortable, no, but I'm cautiously optimistic. I think it's important to point out that while, you know, probably the majority of the industry want racing to go ahead, there's a minority even within horse racing who are very concerned about a continuation of racing, and we seem to have done okay so far, but there won't really be any signs whether racing behind closed doors has been successful for a matter of weeks after it started, to be perfectly honest. So we hope that that everything will carry on, and those who are housebound will have racing to look forward to. Those with who are employed in the industry in whatever shape will still have work. That's a major worry for everyone. It's not just a racing thing. We should have our eyes open to the entire community. So it's a difficult situation. It seems like that it's worth going on at the moment, but we have to learn every day. And of course, if we start getting sickness within the racing community, and then that can grind things to a halt fairly quickly. So it seems from the feedback from the tracks recently, the social distancing, the measures that have been taken have been done very well. Everyone has an awful lot of respect for what needs to be done. And the chances of anyone catching COVID-19 through these meetings has been minimized as much as possible. But, you know, it's still a difficult time. We have to be, we have to proceed cautiously, and we have to be aware of what's going on in the wider world. You know, if we've got lockdown elsewhere, then we have to be aware that may well come to us in time. Obviously, the BHA made a decision to suspend all racing until the beginning of May at the earliest. If you look at the Betfair market again, in terms of will racing in the UK resume by the start of May, you'll find it's about 6 or 7 to 1 for racing to start again as scheduled. A lot of people think the BHA have taken the decision not to race too quickly, but the betting market suggests that's not really the case. So again, you know, when we talked about Cheltenham and the market for that, there's an awful lot of talk about people covering themselves through that market. Not really the case in terms of a resumption of racing in May. And, you know, these are difficult times. There are people who are employed in the industry who are outspoken about not wanting to go ahead. And, of course, there are a lot of people who are, you know, in the UK who can't go ahead with things, who are very upset that things aren't going on behind closed doors. And what we've seen in the last few weeks is that what seems sensible one day looks, you know, looks less sensible in the light of information that we, you know, we subsequently receive. So all we can do is what appears to be correct at the time, and then adjust our behavior accordingly in the light of new evidence, and racing has to be the same.
I think that's the second time we've brought the phrase new evidence back to the show, but it is a time of new evidence, because when we talked about the Cheltenham Festival going ahead, for example, you know, the Premier League, Champions League, that was all going ahead as well, and that's all now gone. Euro 2020 suspended until 2021 so that all the European leagues can finish. The fact that you would delay a major European tournament, a major football tournament, one of the most watched in the world, for an entire year, tells you how bad things are. The Olympics is 101 to be scrapped. There's no way that's going to go ahead this year. I cannot see it. And I guess the difference between Ireland and the UK is that we're a smaller country with a much smaller population, and we don't race every day, although ironically we actually will be racing every day for the next few days because things have been changed. But James, from your perspective, I mean, you work in the industry, obviously writing about racing, and you're trying to live your day-to-day life in the UK. You're not currently having to self-isolate, which is good, but how are things affecting you currently and those you love and those who you're friends with?
Well, it's difficult, isn't it? I feel like when you go out now, there is, it might be me projecting, but there does feel like a sort of an eerie sense everywhere, because everybody knows what's going on and how careful we all need to be. And then you visit the supermarkets and there's empty shelves. And while you try and, you know, move on as normally as you can, it's impossible to ignore, isn't it? And in terms of racing and the racing post over here, there's obviously it's obviously very difficult with everything being stopped over here, but you can understand why it's happened, and just got to try and fill in the blanks really, and get as much information as we can to work out how this is going to affect the industry and how quickly it could get back up and running. But it's, I think even when they do start contemplating restarting racing, it could only be a gradual process. They're not going to just bring the fixture list back to normal and off we go. So it could just run and run. Just have to wait and see, I think, for everything.
It's frightening seeing some of the video footage coming out of the UK with people just going absolutely bonkers, but that's the same in Italy, it's the same in France, it's the same in Spain. Totally anecdotally and based only on my own evidence, I went shopping yesterday in Kilkenny, and shelves were all stacked. There was plenty of food, plenty of everything. The only thing you couldn't get was hand sanitizer. But there was loads of soap, loads of stuff to get, and everybody was keeping their distance, and everybody was very polite, and that's nice to see, because I know that's not necessarily the case in Dublin and in other places, but that was the case yesterday. I have friends who are now out of work, some of them who are not getting paid, some who are, and cousins who are, and friends who are working in frontline services, and I have no idea how they're doing what they're doing, and I can only admire them for it. Guards who are working 12-hour shifts per day, and lots more. And down in Cork, I think it's 180 staff are currently isolated in the Mercy Hospital, over 200 in CUH, and while they're quarantined in the hospital, they have to continue working. So they're sleeping there, they're eating there, but they're also trying their best to maintain patients as well, as more and more and more people develop this horrible disease. Even today, I see The Guardian, as we record on Thursday afternoon, The Guardian reporting that the EU chief Brexit negotiator, Michel Barnier, has got COVID-19. and the Spain death toll is up to 767. So this is a real life crisis, and we all have to stick together, and we all have to be in it together and support one another from a distance in the best possible way that we can. But at the same time, sport does provide a great distraction and a relief to the mind. Sport can be a comforter and a comfort blanket from the horrors and the reality of the world. And for that, I'm very grateful that we get to watch racing. And there's a strange situation in that British terrestrial television are going to show Thurles on Saturday. I have no idea if it's going to be available in Ireland on terrestrial TV, because Virgin Media don't have the rights to Irish racing, but they do have the rights to take the ITV terrestrial coverage. RTE don't turn up unless it's a big meeting. So I don't know if we're going to be able to see the Irish racing on Virgin Media at the weekend. I could not tell you. We'll just have to wait and see. But fair play to them for making it happen. And Sky Sports Racing obviously will be showing Maidan as well, where we're going to see some exciting horses. And look, it's a distraction. And that's the point of this podcast as well, is to try and distract your mind, hopefully entertain you in some way. And we're with you, because a lot of people listening to this will be quite low, isolated, and feeling panicked. And I don't blame you at all. These are strange, strange times, but please God, we'll all get through it. And let's try and have a bit of fun on this one, shall we, in these serious times. So Dundalk is not Friday Night Lights. It's an afternoon meeting, which is a little bit strange. The first race we're going to talk about is the 2 o'clock, the Love Your Mum at the Races weekend meeting auction race. There is betting coming through right now on Betfair Air Club. It was Jutevi's second start for Henry de Brumhead, 2.5. Dunica Aidan O'Brien. That's not confusing at all. Now, his first season as a trainer, he had his first winner at Dundalk back in December, 2.75. His brother, Joseph, has line judge, daughter of Don Approach, is currently 6.0, so a 5-1 shot. And then we've got Gavin Cromwell with Point Reyes, 6.5. Double-figure prices then about the other two. Rory, we shall start with you. Small but select field here. Flower Garland for Dunica Aidan O'Brien. I actually didn't know Aidan was his middle name. Is your second favorite with Henry heading the betting. I'm interested in the Dawn Approach filly, though, for Joseph O'Brien. What about you?
Yeah, this is a it's a nice little contest, this. The two who stand out, I suppose three stand out in form in terms of what they've shown so far, are Air Club, who's got that penalty to carry, Flower Garland, who belatedly won her maiden last time out, but as a daughter of Beach of Falesa, who, if memory serves, took quite a long time to get off the mark herself, but ended up being quite prolific. And Point Reyes for Gavin Cromwell, who was impressive winning over a course and distance in November and then was in a nursery and was disappointing last time out. So they set the form standard. Not much to choose between the three of them and what they've achieved. And then you've got Line Judge, who's very well bred, a daughter of Don Approach, out of a useful performer from a very good family. I thought she went with a fair degree of promise. And what wasn't a terribly strong maiden here in January, she finished third to Abby Hatcher over 7 furlongs, not knocked about, a bit more poorly placed than the principals, but keeping on well without being knocked around by Declan McDonough in the home straight to finish third. I thought she'd improve a big chunk for stepping up to a mile, and given the given both Point and plenty of racing, I thought some. I thought she looked the danger to Air Club on paper. I'm surprised to see as much between them in the betting, because they do have a little bit of betting from most of the firms on this, and it's roughly 6-4 Air Club, 2-1 Flower Garland, and 5-1 Line Judge. I thought Flower Garland was short enough at the prices, and with improvement, I thought Line Judge was very interesting at 5-1.
Very much in agreement with you, particularly getting the little weight allowance as well. But the step up and trip, I also think, will suit And the way the race panned out last time out, the way she stayed on so well, a daughter of a street cry mare, I think, yeah, all weather should suit. And I would be reasonably confident of her running a massive race. I think she's a big, big price right now. 6.0 currently on the Betfair Exchange. James, for you, what's your current thinking on this race?
Well, I think Line Judge could definitely improve a chunk and is dangerous. But before I saw the prices, I was definitely keenest on Air Club. And while he looks a little bit short potentially, I'd probably still stick with him. You know, for Henry de Bromhead, who had two festival winners despite Notebook and Aplutard not winning, just so that's quite an achievement, I thought. But he did well on debut, and he beat June of Pilar of Joseph O'Brien's, who's won twice since, including on the bridle at Southall, and he's now rated 92. And the third had come into that race off a run in the Moigler Assurance for Bolger, but she didn't do anything, hasn't done anything since, but that was, still looked a good race at the time. And then the fifth and sixth both went close in a similar maiden 3 weeks later, and then the sixth won another one at Dundalk following that, and is now rated 72. So I think that was a pretty good race for the time of year, and I suspect that form is strong enough to allow Air Club to defy a penalty. Flower Garland I thought would be shorter, actually. I think she was the first ever winner for Donica O'Brien.
That's right.
And she won very easily, but it looks a pretty average race with nothing really putting up a fight. There's always a worry, I guess, with the horse trained by an O'Brien, a filly trained by an O'Brien who starts winning, that they could put a string of wins together. But I'd be happy to leave her alone. And I think Air Club and Line Judge are the two for me, and Air Club, just because of the strength of that debut form, I suspect makes him tough to beat at this level.
For some reason, I thought it was back in December. And it just goes to show you how quickly time flies. It was February when Donica trained his first winner.
Yeah, because otherwise he'd be a second season trainer.
That's true. This is true, yeah. But it just goes to show you how quickly time flies and how it all moves on. So final selections then. It's the favorite for James. You're with Air Club for Henry de Bromhead and Wayne Lorden. And Rory and I are going for Declan McDonough and Joseph O'Brien with Line Judge. We'll move on to the 3 o'clock, shall we? I'm really hoping that Sarah Lynham's Darkest Hour runs a big race, because Sarah's on the podcast on Monday, hopefully alongside Peter T. Fornital, as we'll tackle a few big conversations that we haven't had a chance to talk about just yet on the podcast, as we were a little bit distracted with a certain thing called the Cheltenham Festival. Betting on this one is kind of a guessing game right now, but if you were to go on the forecast as we record at 149.33, Juliet Rose is put in as an 11-10 favourite. Dutch Admiral will be second favourite, unanswered around about a sixes chance, and then you're looking at figurehead eights and above. Rory, I'll start with you again. Juliet Rose will, I'm sure, be catching a lot of attention for Joseph O'Brien. And Presgrave for Joseph was the one that I was probably the most interested in. Five lengths second on debut back in February, representing Lloyd Williams, and a gelded son of Camelot wearing first time blinkers. I shall be putting my money there, I suspect. What's your thinking?
Yeah, they met each other last time out, didn't they? Juliet Rose and Presgrave. Mm. With Juliet Rose trading very short and running, when beaten ahead by China Storm. She went 102 in the run, in a very messy race. She was well placed, but just done on the line. Presgrave was slowly away and poorly placed, and was only seventh, but he was only beaten 4.5 lengths in seventh, and there should be a fair degree of improvement to come from him. Wearing a tongue tie for debut, a little bit of a worry. Wearing blinkers for a second start, you could argue, is a little bit of a worry as well. I would have thought that some owners don't like sticking tongue ties on their horses. Indeed, some trainers don't like first time out, and they don't like going for headgear very early. I'd have thought Lloyd Williams would be one of those who's a lot more prosaic about the use of headgear. It's just a case of doing the right thing by the horse at the right time. But a little, it's a tiny concern that they're going for blinkers second time out. But you can, you know, you weigh that up and you make a decision based on that. In terms of what he's achieved, not an awful lot, strictly speaking. But then the way that race went, it was difficult for him with greenness with a slow start in a slowly run race, to do an awful lot more than he did. So it'll be no surprise to see him improving markedly. Juliet Rose, he's very much bred for this trip. She's arguably got the best form. You could say that Dutch Admiral, was fourth in a listed race here last time out. That's strictly speaking the best form in the contest, but I suspect that's flattering form. He did seem to improve a fair bit. He was fourth in a minor event at the track prior to that, over 7 furlongs. His pedigree doesn't scream stamina, Dutch Admiral, but he improved for stepping up a trip on a second start to 7. And he seemed to improve again when fourth in that listed race last time out behind Crossfire Hurricane. But again, that was a slowly run race and he was well positioned throughout. And I suspect it will prove to be very flattering to him. And I would have thought Juliet Rose, again, she's not done a hell of a lot on the clock, because she needed the experience on debut, was slowly away and out the back early on before making late headway on her debut over 7 furlongs in January, and stepped up, as I said, to be second last time out. That was a very slowly run race that turned into a sprint. I don't think that would have suited her, despite the fact that she was well placed in the race. On pedigree, she's by Camelot out of a Dalakani mare. She's going to be seen to better effect over a very well run. It's an extended mile and a quarter here, but a mile and a quarter, mile and a half on pedigree will suit her down to the ground, and she's probably going to improve a fair bit more in the hope that we get a decent gallop here. I'm not entirely sure who's going to make the running. Time form suggests that Presgrave will make the running. I'm not entirely sure how that's backed up by the figures, given that he missed the break on his only start, but there's no guaranteed pace in this race, and most of these have been involved in slowly run races that wouldn't have shown them off particularly well to date. So the worry going forward again is that that you could get a false pace, which might end up giving you a false result. But given that she's been through that scenario before and she's got experience over course and distance, I would favour Juliet Rose here to uphold the form with Presgrave. For all I'm well aware that the stable companion could improve markedly from that debut run.
Okay, so that's the analysis from Rory. What about you, James? Give us the gold in the sand.
Well, I agree about Presgrave. I think he's liable to improve quite a lot for that debut, and he should be a bit sharper with the blinkers, hopefully out of the gates, and perhaps that's why it's thought he might go forward. So I'd agree with you on Presgrave. I think it's probably worth mentioning Haparanda as well, just because she's a half sister to Hazapur, and her dam's a half sister to Harzan, who obviously won the Derby and the Irish Derby. So she might be a longer term prospect, but it would be interesting to see if she can show something here. She didn't show a great deal on debut, but I definitely think she could be a longer term this season for Dermot Weldon and the Aga Khan.
Okay, interesting.
She was, of course, disqualified on debut because Conor Hoban didn't weigh in after that Galway maiden, so she was knocked back to last. But she did make a bit of late progress to finish midfield. And again, she's exactly the type of horse making debut late in the turf season who would leave that form miles behind in her, first or second start as a three-year-old.
It was like the penny was dropping very late with her when she started to stay on, and then you had that incident then with Conor Hoban. This will take us on then to Handicap, the 4:30 at Dundalk. Easter week racing, 15th and 19th of April. Hopefully, again, as we record on Thursday afternoon at 3:57, we are currently awaiting prices. But I should just say that the maximum field size at Dundalk is 14. Which obviously is a perfect number for bookmakers from an each way betting standpoint. Dang it. But Rory, is there any particular bias that you're looking for? Rory, that's the Rory virus now. It's the Delargy virus and not the dreaded COVID-19, isn't it?
Well, who knows? Who knows what it is at this stage?
Oh, dear.
We're more than used to this from my front room.
It's something we're well used to. field size of 14, is there a particular draw bias that you're interested in? Stalls 1 to 5 tend to do well, don't they?
Yeah, I think the draw bias is often overplayed. And I don't have the figures in front of me for Dundalk at the moment. But I'll tell you what, if you go to James, I can dig out the figures for the draw bias over 6 furlongs in a field like this at Dundalk, and we can talk about that in a minute or two. It suits me.
Perfect. So Rory's going to get that up for us. I'm going to guess that if you're drawn out wide, it's a disadvantage over 6. But I'm willing to be corrected on that. Maybe they've ironed that one out. Who is taking your interest here, James?
Well, Icy Breeze is probably sticking out to me a little bit. It's just left Anthony Mulholland and is now with Anthony McCann. They put blinkers on for the first time and drawn 2. So I think it could definitely get involved. There are prices now. I think it's available at 6-1. The favourite Major Power is about 11-4. That's going for a 4-timer. But at this level, it's always a bit tricky to be confident horses are going to keep their runs going. And I'm hoping blinkers for the first time on the mare, I See Breeze, and the trainer switch could pay dividends.
Excellent. That sounds quite good to me. And what price did you say you were getting there?
6-1, I can see.
Rory, hopefully that was enough time for you to come up with a draw bias at Dundalk.
As I said, sometimes there is an assumption, that, particularly in all-weather tracks around a bend, that the inside stall is often the place to be, or low draws are best. And that's generally true. But it's not always true of the lowest stall of all. And most all-weather tracks, Southall obviously is a bit of a law to itself in the UK, but most all-weather tracks, you'll find that stall 2 and 3 tend to have a better record in sprint races than stall 1 does. Again, Southall, they're over 5 furlongs, that's a straight 5, where low draws do very well. You know, being drawn in stall 1 can be very beneficial. And indeed, that's borne out by the historic figures for Dundalk. The strike rate in handicaps of stall 1, 8 from 121, going back a few years, whereas stalls 2, 13 from 121, stall 3, 10 from 121, stall 4, 13 from the same number, stall 5, 14 from the same number. So you'll see that there is a bias towards the low numbers. But if you see you're drawn 1, you think you're drawn very well, you're actually probably drawn worse than stall 8 or 9, historically speaking. Indeed, stall 13, which you'd have thought would be as bad as anything in a 14-runner race, gets the same number of winners historically as stall 1. So something to bear in mind there.
That is very, very interesting and very much worth taking a note of.
Yeah, I'd be against Major Power on that basis, looking at the card. And he'll obviously be very popular coming here looking for a 4-timer. But his last 3 wins have come over 7 furlongs. He's drawn right in stall 1. My theory about stall 1 being a problem is that you've always got the rail on your inside, which is not... It means you've got little room to manoeuvre, really. If you're drawn in 2 or 3, you've got an option of getting out and past or tucking in behind or whatever. You're on a stall 1, you don't get away well, you tend to find yourself pocketed. And I think that's why that stall tends to do poorly across a number of all-weather tracks when there's no other bias at work. But anyway, so I'd be against Major Power on that basis. And I see no reason why Poet's Pride will run his race again. He was a winner here last time out. He has been running up to a mile, and you could argue that's a bit of an issue, but I don't think he truly stays a mile. He was winner over 7 furlongs last time out. I think he'd be perfectly happy to drop back to 6 based on his historical form for David Barron. So he would just about be the pick for me, but it's an open race, and you pay your money, you take your choice, really, don't you?
It's a very open race. And that then brings us nicely along to the 5 o'clock at Dundalk, again over 6 furlongs. Ladies' Day, Sunday, 12th of July, handicap, where Lady Mora will head the weights for Johnny Murta and Gary Halpin. Predicted betting, this is going to be a wide open race, but 5s for Lady Mora. Le Quiento, my selection is hopefully going to be 6s plus. So James, we'll start with you first of all, my man. Who are you going for in the 5 o'clock at Fundalk?
I quite like Amelia Jane here. She sort of made a step in the right direction last time over a mile, but a drop back to six I think would probably suit her again. And if that run last time was an indication of where she's heading, I know she might look a little bit exposed, but I just think off such a low mark and the right drop back and trip, I think there are enough signs to give her a chance in what's another very open and quite difficult race.
Nice and succinct from James. Rory, for you, the 5 o'clock at Dundalk.
Yeah, there's plenty of these. Your selection, Le Quinto.
Le Quinto!
Not even a hint of Italian about it.
Le Quinto!
What's his sire?
Requiento.
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 No, he's having a second start in handicaps. He did improve first time out. He hadn't shown an awful lot in his first three runs. And it's worth bearing in mind that there are other horses in this race, the likes of Lady Susan, Kerry Blue, Bankery, who've had three runs in maiden races or minor company. Lily Alcazar, I should throw in there as well, particularly Lily Alcazar, actually, who are liable to improve for stepping into handicaps for the first time. And that makes it three-year-old handicaps in mid-March. I'd be treading very carefully, I have to say, because a lot of horses who look limited at two will suddenly blossom at some stage in the spring of the three-year-old campaign. I'm not sure we've really hit spring yet for that to happen, but you never know. Whereas a lot of horses who've shown reasonable form at two won't really progress from two to three and will be very vulnerable. So just be very, I'd be very wary reading the form book. In saying that, I'd give a strong chance to Seb Starr. We haven't seen the son of Kalachi for a while. He's well bred. He hasn't lived up to his pedigree thus far. John Ox's son of Kalachi. The dam was very useful, but he did improve over course and distance last time to finish second in a low grade nursery. That was clearly a career best, backed up by the time as well. He made most of the running there. He'd been handy prior to that. He'd made the running when finishing down the field over course and distance in his previous start, finishing weakly as he had done in his early start, but he kept on really well. Despite setting a strong pace last time out under this 10-pound claimer. And although he's now had 4 months off, so you're taking his fitness on trust, I thought the fact that he did take that step forward last time out and the fact that it's backed up by the time suggests that he might belatedly be able to show form in line with his pedigree.
Nicely done, Rory De Largy. I'll give one more race a mention at Dundalk, and that's the first race, the 130, where Tyr Connell for Sarah Lynham, who's a bit of a legend, it has to be said, and a hero of Dundalk. He'll be coming back into form soon enough, but cover your ears, Sarah. From stall 15, I'm taking you on. Damien English's Dance Alone, 7.5 on Betfair. Damien gets us off to a winning start, hopefully, in the 130 at Dundalk.
The Betfair Exchange. More ways to bet, more ways to win. Proud sponsors of the Final Furlong podcast.
Lads, we just talked about flat racing.
I know, I feel a little bit dirty, but, you know, what can you do?
And we did it just so subtly. We just went right in, fun dog, never highlighted the fact that we were talking about flat racing. But let's switch to jumps, shall we? Thursday, the Pierce Maloney Memorial Novice Chase is a grade three at Thurles. 10 past 3 over 2 miles and 2 furlongs up towards the top of the weights for Jessica Harrington, sizing Potsy for Anne and Alan Potts Limited, the late Potts family. And then a number of interesting horses, including Cheltenham runner-up from last season, Dallas the Pictons, and Tower Bridge, who is desperately trying to regain his form. And when I spoke to Joseph O'Brien about his Cheltenham team, he was relatively short in the betting for the novice handicap chase that he was runner-up in last year behind the Plutard. And Joseph was very open with his saying that, no, he's not going to Cheltenham. We're not bringing him there. But it looks as though we will see him at the weekend. But you were making the point, though, Rory, that a lot of these races are going to be carpet-entered. Trainers are going to be throwing a lot here. We probably have a reasonable idea about Thurles, but once we get towards Downpatrick and Nace, then things will become a little bit more tricky.
just looking at the meeting at Thurles, it appears to me that there are some absolutely huge fields, and I didn't really want to be digging through races with 50 odd runners to try to find interesting angles, because you're not getting any real shape to them, to me. But in saying that, at least in the Pierce Maloney, which is the native upmanship novices chase, you get a smaller field, you get an idea of who's liable to turn up there. This looks a decent contest, and it's got a horse that I like in it as well. So that's that at least makes it the pick of the card for me. I'm very much hoping that Dunvegan runs. I was very sweet on Dunvegan at Ferry House last time, but the meeting was abandoned, and then abandoned again, and then abandoned a third time, and we didn't get to see him at all. He was third to Cashback at Nace last time out, having won at Punchestown on heavy ground. Before that, I thought he got a little bit outpaced in the middle of the race at Nace before keeping on well. The extra 2 furlongs will suit him down to the ground. You know, the form of his Punchestown win looks solid enough. He's fundamentally a sound jumper. He's only had the 2 starts over fences, but to me, he's clearly going to be a fair bit better over fences than he was as a hurdler. And I think he's got a chance of picking up a graded chase, and this looks like a decent opportunity for him. So obviously no betting on this at the moment, but and we don't know how many are going to turn out, or indeed whether he's an intended runner. But given that he was declared 3 times for one meeting, I'd have thought that Pat Fahey would be pretty keen to get a run into him, and he would be my pick in the race. Although there's plenty to say about the rest of the field as well. Dallas DePicton's a very interesting runner, but he's a horse who will be seen to better effect when he's stepping up and trip. And I don't know if we're going to see it, but something like the Irish National down the line would be interesting for him. He's been campaigned around 2.5 miles, but he was entered in the Grand National at Aintree before that was cancelled. Connections have always thought that he would prove a different horse on good ground. His chase form so far lags a long way behind what he did over hurdles until last time out, when he was a very close fourth to Royal Rendezvous in a grade 3 at Nace, the Nace Director's Plate. That was the first time he'd worn blinkers. It was a big step in the right direction. And although he didn't jump brilliantly that day, having unseated and caused the injury to Jack Kennedy the time before that, he'd have learned plenty from it. And he's maybe the most interesting long-term prospect in there. And his handicap mark's gone up to 140 from 135 on the back of that. But he's one of those who's interesting going forward. I'm happy to let him go here. But I know that, I suspect that Gordon Elliott has a big handicap in him at some stage, whether he goes the Irish National or if that isn't a possibility for whatever reason, he might be an interesting one for the Galway Plate.
So make sure you're adding in Dallas DePictons to your At The Races tracker. Should mention, by the way, that the Betfair ambassador Gordon Elliott made a very interesting announcement yesterday. Tiger Roll is due to run in the Irish Grand National if Ferry House goes ahead. And that's a huge, huge story. And hopefully we will weather this storm. We'll be able to get through it. And we can see him run there. What a story that would be. It would be yet another massive long-distance handicap for him to go and win. But to go and win the Irish Grand National would take an awful lot. And I'd love to see it. It's going to be a big field. There's going to be an awful lot of Gigginstown horses in it. But he would be fascinating if they decide to go there. And there is hope that he will remain in training next season as well and try and go for the technically 3 in a row at Aintree next year. But Gordon has stated that if it's on, they would like to bring Tiger Roll to the Irish Grand National. And that, Rory, from a weights perspective, that's going to be fascinating. But just his presence in the lineup it'll elevate that race so much. The interest in it is always massive, but even more so if it goes ahead.
Yeah, and obviously that's a big if at this stage. But I suppose with doubt about where we're going to be in a month's time, in 2 months' time, in 6 months' time, people are, and I think that's reflected in the big field sizes we're seeing on Saturday and Sunday. you know, trainers want to make sure they're entering horses for races that are liable to go ahead, and you can't look too far in the future. But that'd be tremendous. Of course, his Tiger Rules rating 168 in Ireland, so he's not quite as, so he'd be better off, strictly speaking, than he would be in the Grand National itself. But then again, we know that he's especially well suited to entry, and half the argument about his handicap mark is that, you know, he wouldn't be as effective at a standard park track. But it'd be a good way of finding out, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
I know he was beaten at Cheltenham, and much was made of the shock of that defeat, but I thought he ran an absolutely huge race given his injuries. Given the fact that he needed an interrupted preparation going into Cheltenham to finish second, miles clear of the field, behind a horse that has every chance of becoming a legend himself in Easy's Land. So he's not lost an awful lot in terms of ability, Tiger Rule. And if he did go to Ferry House, I was going to say the place would be jam-packed, wouldn't it? But
I'm afraid not.
That seems wishful thinking at this stage, doesn't it? But yes, the TV figures would be through the roof.
Yeah, it would generate so much interest if that happens. It'd be fantastic. And I'd have no problems with a behind-closed-doors Irish Grand National. That would be absolutely fine with me. James, let's bring you back in and bring ourselves back down to earth as we look at the Native Upmanship race. Now the Pierce Maloney Memorial Novice Chase, the three then a Thurles, Dunvegan, so is the selection for Rory Delargy. What about yourself?
Yeah, my views are very similar to Rory's, actually. I do think Dallas Picton is interesting because those blinkers seemed to wake him up last time, and but for making a mistake two out, I think he probably would have won that. So I suspect he could be shorter if in this race if he'd done that. But I like Dunvegan. The race behind Cashback was interesting because 0-10 is likely to take him on again here. And he finished ahead of Dunvegan that day. And he was probably the only horse that could go with Cashback while Dunvegan was left a bit flat-footed. But the way he sort of picked up late on to get quite close to 0-10 makes me think that over this extra two furlongs, he can reverse that form. And I've always really quite liked him. He's a flashy grey, which I'm a little bit susceptible to generally, but he's always given me the impression he's got quite a lot of talent in there, and we haven't quite seen it. I mean, over hurdles, he won really, really easily and then didn't seem to progress. And his chase debut was interesting because I think Brecon went very, very quickly, pulled very, very hard. And some people thought Dunvegan was a lucky winner, but I think he was going to get there and he would have been a good winner anyway. And in this sort of contest, I really like him. I mean, he's sort of on my radar for the novice handicap chase on day one at Cheltenham, but he never got that third run in. And I'm not sure if it was ever actually an option, but he was always up there in the antipost betting. And I just think this is a race he can win now. Sizing Potsy, I think, isn't quite as good as that 12-length win last time made him look. It was pretty horrible ground that day. And I don't think many of those rivals actually handled it. And Cut the Mustard seems to cut out quite quickly generally. So he's potentially overrated on that form. So yeah, Dunvegan is the one for me as well.
Some people are probably going to look at his form with Captain Guinness because he was running a blinder in the Supreme. And obviously the two wide margin wins last time, and he may very well end up making the market for his Padfat. He won this race 2 years ago, back in 2018 with Castle Grace Paddy. Hopefully he can do so again with Dunvegan. That's the 3:10 at Thurles. As we move along to Downpatrick on Sunday, where the Randox Ulster National Handicap will be the feature race. 29,500 to the winner. Again, as we're recording on the Thursday afternoon, your guess is as good as mine as in terms of prices, and your guess is as good as mine, Rory's, and James's as to who the hell is actually going to line up. There's 700 horses entered. Well, not 700, but, you know, 35 currently entered for the race. Your shortlist for this one, Rory, I'd love to see good old Venetian de May get a run in here, but he's number 23 currently, so possibly not. But who's on your shortlist for a race that I know you're very fond of?
Well, as a northerner myself, it's a race that's always been of some interest. Gordon Elliott has loads in the race at this stage.
He also has the best named horse for the race at the current point in the Philip Reynolds horse. It's all guesswork. Literally is.
Yes. Yeah, well, Gordon at this stage has Elwood, Gundigger, General Principle, Woodswell, Chev de Kernevue, to Kirvin, you even, after telling you off. It's all guesswork. Out Sam, who was, of course, was third in the cross country at Cheltenham, Diamond Turf and Poor Man's Hill, and Robin Dupuis. So he's not going to be running all of those. And it's difficult to get a great angle on Gordon's there. But there's a couple that are of interest to me that I'll mention. Interested to see Anshalahi Klischip back after a longish absence in different hands now as well. But got to mention last year's winner, who's very lightly raced since, Amelino. Won this race last year for Roy Watson off a lowly handicap mark. He would have been a little bit of a surprise winner, I suppose, although he'd won at Leopardstown in his previous start, having struggled a bit before that. He's still only a seven-year-old. He went to Aintree, not for the Grand National, but for the listed handicap chase that's run before the Grand National, and disappointed there, didn't really jump. But those are stiff fences on the Mildmay course at Aintree. Since then, he's had two runs over hurdles, well beaten both times, but the second run particularly would have been just to get him spot on for this. Didn't wear his usual headgear that day at Navan early this month. And Roy Watson will have got him here cherry ripe for this race. So he's one not to rule out on recent form. The form they showed him winning this race last year gives him a decent chance. And the other one I'd be reasonably keen on in the race is Rocky Silver, who was disappointing in the national trial at Punchestown last time out. Prior to that, he'd been a winner at Punchestown over 3 mile, 1.5, finishing very strongly under Derek O'Connor. He looks a thorough stayer. I know he was beaten over that 3.5 mile trip last time out, but his jumping led him down there. And to be honest, his jumping had looked fairly assured prior to that. I think you can draw a line through his last run. And looking at his overall record, his chase record particularly, he's been mixing chasing and hurdling this season. But his chase form prior to Punchestown last time out was going in the right direction. I don't think a mark of 130 is beyond him. And he would be very high on my shortlist for the race.
What about you, James? Who's on your shortlist for the Ulster National?
Well, I suspect the Leinster National might be key to this race. Fourth was General Principle there. But the one I like most was second, Shebda Kervenu.
Oh, good man.
Yeah, he had a lot of experience in France over fences. And then he's arrived at Gordon Elliott and he's been quite consistent in four runs. And he should be £7 better off, I think, with If You Catch Me Now, who finished not miles behind at Punchestown over 3.5 miles. And he seems to be shaping really well, particularly last time behind Cap York, who's also a horse I quite like. He just feels like the obvious one in this open race.
I love it. And I thought that run in particularly the two last runs, Punchestown and Nace, were gold. So I'm following you in there. Delighted to hear you say that. So that's the Ulster National. This then brings us back to the flat, gentlemen. And Nace on Monday, we'll talk about the 4:30 Nace, which is the 1 mile Lodge Park Stud EBF Park Express Stakes. It's a race that Dermot Weld has done quite well in over the years. Cheery Bayo for Jim Bulger will be running. Aidan O'Brien's got Blissful. Ger Lines has a Coolmore Runner Even So. Dunica has Flower Garland. Tommy Stack's got Too Soon to Panic, which is also a very aptly named horse, although I think it's probably are in the middle of panic. And the Group 3, so Rory, what interests you?
It won't be the strongest Group 3 of the year, obviously, but there are plenty of potential improvers in the field. I thought again, we don't have declarations, and I don't know whether you're going to have the likes of Even So lining up against Blissful here, but I thought Even So was an interesting runner for Ger Lyons. She's very much bred to come into her own as a three-year-old. She's a half sister to Miss Latin, who's a mile and a half winner. Stayed 2 miles. Breeze Hill, the dam, stayed 1.25 miles well, and comes from the family of Dr. Devious. So she did well to be placed over an extended 7 furlongs first time out of Tipperary and got off the mark at Goran on her second start. winning with plenty to spare. Strictly speaking, that's not outstanding form when you're looking at a group three. But I thought, in terms of the field, she was open to as much improvement as anything here, particularly stepping up in trip. She came from close to the rear on her debut. She made all the running second time out. Again, that was a late September maiden at Gore, and it wouldn't have been the strongest contest in the world, but she won it with plenty up her sleeve. And given her pedigree and her trainer, I thought she would improve considerably for that. So it's a tough little contest. She's got to improve her past two or three of these, if indeed she is going to run in the race. But I thought she would... she's certainly of considerable interest. We don't have any betting to go on either, but I'd be as interested in her as I am in anything in this race on paper.
The other thing to say is that in terms of the Betfair Exchange, the liquidity is going to be unreal, far bigger than it would normally be for Irish racing. It is quite big anyway, but it's going to be much bigger over the weekend because there's no UK racing to bet on. Don't be afraid to post up. Don't be afraid to ask for a bigger price. Same thing applies to in-running bets as well. But it's going to be even so for Rory DeLarghi for the Coolmore team. James, for you, the Group 3 at Nace, 4:30 on Sunday, on Monday even, the 4:30 on Monday at Nace. What's your selection, my man?
Well, Too Soon to Panic, definitely the most appropriate winner, given the name. But she's got a little bit to find with Blissful. And I'm not actually that mad about Blissful herself. She won the listed race narrowly last season after winning a maiden narrowly. And then I thought she got exposed really in the Rockfell when soundly beaten by Daye. And I would be tempted to have a go at the Jim Bolger horse, Cherubeo, who you mentioned, because she was so green on debut. She nearly threw Kevin Manning off last year. I think she spooked something in the latter stages. The fact she managed to win anyway is quite positive. And this is a sort of race at this time of year, probably in testing ground, that I'd rather take a chance on something, really relishing it. And you never know, especially with Jim Bolger at this time of year, he can often have on this card, can have two or three or four winners if he comes out firing.
He tends to have a pretty good record early in the season in Ireland, so she'll be an interesting runner. He's also got Halami. We'll go with that. For Jim Bolger in the 4:00, the Defoy Stakes. I've given up. Sir Dragonet is scheduled to make his comeback in this listed race at Nace. We're kind of playing guesswork here. Last year, Jessica Harrington took the race with Still Standing, but Sir Dragonet back in training. It all went horribly wrong in the Derby. He did run a good race, but after that, he just wasn't quite the same. Well held in the St. Ledger as well. But it's exciting to see him back, because if they can get him right, then he's a very, very interesting prospect.
Yeah, I wouldn't be too harsh on him for the St. Ledger run. He's beaten three lengths in the end behind a horse that many people consider to be absolutely outstanding and Logician. So it was a lot very quickly in his career going to Epsom on his third start, having made his debut completely unfancied in a maiden at Tipperary at the back end of April. And the question is whether that has a lasting effect, or whether you take the view that, given a long break since September, he will get back on an upward curve again. I think he's quite likely to. I think your biggest problem at this stage of the year is working out whose teams are going to be most forward, rather than, you know, picking out who you think the best horses are. And I wonder whether Sir Dragonet will be cherry ripe for this so early in the season. That would be my concern. We were talking about which yards tend to get going. The other stable that I always keep on side of this stage of the year would be Fozzie Stack, who's got Too Early to Panic in the Park Express. Fozzie and his father before him, always very, very strong in the opening weeks of the season. So bear that in mind as well, particularly when the ground is bad and we don't have. Do we have an advanced coin description for Nace? I'd imagine it's pretty soft.
It's heavy right now.
Heavy, yeah. And again, that's something to bear in mind. Soft ground should suit Sir Dragon. He handled it very well at Chester, but of course he was racing on quick ground at Epsom and at Doncaster after that. So that should be fine for him. But as I said, my gut feeling is that he's going to be a little bit behind. I will put up as a horse who will improve again this season. I liked him a lot last year. Nikodjak Kyiv. He was, you know, he worked his way through the ranks in handicaps last season, and only sort of took the step up to listed group company in the late summer onwards. He was third in a listed race on heavy ground at Limerick on his final start. That was a career best, but he'd been threatening that before that. I thought he was a little unlucky not to finish closer in the Northfields handicap at the Curra in September. That's, you know, you don't get handicaps around a mile and a quarter more competitive than that. He finished fifth in a field of 16. To me, he looks like he wants digging the ground. Most of his form last season was on a quicker surface, but that second Daddy's Dart at Limerick in October, maybe you don't treat form from the end of the season with the same respect you do mid-season form, but that looked like an improved effort. As I said, he looked several times through the season like he could make the jump from decent handicaps into listed in group company, and I'll give him a chance to be well enough forward now to take advantage of that.
Anything here for you, James?
Well, I think it's a very interesting race. I think, as Rory said, the key is knowing or working out who are the most forward, and I hope the fact that Aidan O'Brien is sending so many entries at this card suggests he's more forward than is often the case. But Sir Dragonette does look the potentially high class 4-year-old that he sends out needing the run. But if he doesn't, you'd have to fancy him, especially on this ground, because the way he moves suggests he would probably enjoy a testing surface. And as Roy said, the St. Ledger run is actually a pretty good one. And I'm one of those people who does rate Logician very, very highly. The most interesting one probably for me is Pondus, because I liked him a lot for James Fanshaw when he was over here. He ran really well at Newbury one day behind Fox Chairman, a horse I also rate quite highly. And it's very interesting to see Joseph O'Brien now has him for Lloyd Williams. I'm sure they have some interesting long-term plans, and I don't think he minds this ground either. So if Sir Dragonate does find himself needing the run, he would probably be the one to go for. Although if there's something to sort of spring a surprise, maybe it's Brogue, who again was another bit like Cherubeo in the last race he talked about. He was very impressive at Cork, but it was quite a long time ago, in May last year. He looked a horse with, you know, quite a lot to give there. And if Dermot Weld has him firing now, he could spring a surprise, I think, assuming he handles the ground.
They're all horses that should be going into your At the Races tracker. It is something that should be noted as well, that Joseph O'Brien now has in his care not only Pondus, ex-James Fanshaw, but also an ex-Aga Khan horse, Vermilli, V-E-R-I-M-L-I. Won three in a row in France, was second just narrowly under Christophe Soumillon on his last start in Deauville last year. And Lloyd Williams has acquired him from the Aga Khan, and he's been transferred from Ellen Duroy Dupre to Owning Hill. So yet another recruitment to Joseph O'Brien's yard.
These are both Melbourne Cup types.
They have to be.
In terms of, you know, this is the idea, Lloyd Williams buys horses like this who may turn into Melbourne Cup horses. And it's interesting they're both entered in a listed race early in the season, because I believe in order to pre-qualify for the Melbourne Cup, you need to win a listed race or be placed in group company at the right sort of trip. I don't know, there's a mile and a quarter and further. Actually, it may not be distance specific at all, to be perfectly honest. But yeah, you need to be able to qualify for the race in the first place by getting that black type. So winning a listed race historically has been the hurdle you've got to jump. And obviously, it's interesting that Joseph has got both of these out reasonably early. Because the earlier in the season you are, the weaker those listed races are. And of course, if you then meet your qualification to get into the race, then you can plan your schedule in a different sort of way. You can you know, race your horse in the races that suit it best, if you're thinking about the Melbourne Cup. Whereas if you're not qualified, you're looking through the season about where can I find a race that's weak enough for me to get qualification, or, you know, what's the best race to go for in order to get there. If you get that out of the way straight away, then that's a worry off your mind. So it's interesting the pair of them are in here.
Good shout, Rory. There are 7 and 8 on the card as we record on Thursday, Pondus and Vermilli for Joseph O'Brien with the Melbourne Cup, surely the long-term target. Pop quiz, hot shots. Opening race at Nace is always the 5 furlong, 2-year-old maiden. In the last 10 years, how many times has Aidan O'Brien won this race? Rory.
That's a good one. I'm going to say once.
James.
None.
Did you look that up?
No, I was going to say once, and I was either going to go two or none, so I went for none.
I heard a mouse click.
I bet he does well at liar's dice.
I heard a mouse click in the background. Yeah. The correct answer is zero. No wins from the.
It's always when you say that, it's either 8 or 9, or it's.
Or it's nothing.
0 or 1.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, tends to be. Jim Bulger won it 3 times in a row, including with Don Approach, who would go on to win a Coventry in a 2000 Guineas. Some interesting runners. They've got Air Force Blue having his first runner in Ireland and the UK. If he runs, that would be Giorgio Vasari. So we'll see if he lines up. And Horoscope for 300,000 guineas. It would just be worth looking up that race.
Giorgio Vasari is interesting, isn't he? Like being by Air Force Blue. It'd be interesting to see if he's a proper stallion.
Yeah.
And he's a half-brother to Sioux Nation, who won the Norfolk and the Phoenix Stakes. So, you know, when moment when there's better ground, he's one that'll probably come out and could be quite useful.
And
it's a tricky contest, this, in that it's going to be very heavy ground, and you're looking at largely unfit 2-year-olds or 2-year-olds who could be got fitter. So you're looking for really speedy pedigrees, but most sort of naturally speedy types will probably struggle over a stiff 5 furlongs and heavy ground first time out. So it's not always the easiest way. I always tend to just look at the folding date and see who's sort of foaled in January and February. And it's a very broad brush. But the earlier you fold, the more forward you tend to be. And Falsaran of Donaghy is a January fold by No Nay Never out of a Fastnet Rockmare. And if I had a guess at one that's forward, that would be that. But there's an awful lot of guessing going on here.
We're done. Anything to get you excited for the weekend? What are you really looking forward to, James?
Well, one thing we didn't mention actually was the bumper at Downpatrick. potentially could have Bally Adam against You Say It Best and Ragnar Lodbrok. I mean, they might not. None of them might run, but that's potentially a really interesting race for next season. Bally Adam and You Say It Best, both impressive point-to-point winners, both very expensive purchases at Cheltenham. Bally Adam was absolutely hounding betting for his debut. Didn't really seem to handle the really horrible ground, but he travelled very nicely. And if that materialises, it's definitely something worth watching. It certainly keep me interested for the weekend.
I'm wondering if they will run him because of the ground, but if they do, it would be fascinating to see him out again, because Jane was very keen on him, but also the time form, I can't remember who it is, but the time form guy who does the sectional times for points to points was raving about him. Absolutely raving about him.
Actually, if you look at him up on Twitter, you can watch that race, and he does hack ground.
Oh, it's insane. It's insane. He's definitely a very exciting prospect. So yeah, well worth mentioning that. Rory, for you, what are you most looking forward to watching over the weekend?
Martial law being enacted. Hopefully we'll screen it live.
Well, I'm sure Sky News will stream it live. Yeah, I hope that doesn't happen. I really do. And I hope you're safe and that you're okay. You're social distancing yourself. Your mental health is as well as your physical health. It's an incredibly frustrating situation, but we have to make the best of it. And we have to come together while also being apart. So do what you can to help those you love who may be afraid to ask for help. And don't be afraid to ask for help yourself. Nothing wrong with having to do that. There's nothing wrong with being afraid. These are really scary times. It's unprecedented. This is something that we'll hopefully all be able to look back on and talk about how bonkers those few months were, and hopefully that's all it will be, just a few months, and we'll get past it together. If you are a huge racing fan, and I hope that you are listening to the Final Furlong podcast, then I strongly recommend you go on to attheraces.com, because there is so much content there. Brilliant content looking back at Cheltenham, particularly from Simon Rowlands. Declan Ricks has put up a brilliant article as well, and lots of other fantastic content too, and lots of interviews at Stable Tours and real and accurate updates about what's currently going on in the racing world. So make sure you're checking out attheraces.com. And with that in mind, don't pay attention to WhatsApp rumors. Don't pay attention to Twitter rumors. As Harry Derham said the other day, it's probably time for real news instead of fake news. Go to whatever news service it is that you trust. Read the NHS, read the HSE, and follow their guidelines. And with the help of God, we'll all get through this together and we'll be back to normal. Well, as normal as we can be, sooner rather than later.
All joking aside, let's hope that we're all able to pull through this and things start looking up. There are signs elsewhere in the world that taking the right precautions will see us through things in the not too distant future. But we can't just ignore the advice that we're given. We've got to do the right thing. And hopefully doing the right thing early means that we're back to normal quicker than we might have been otherwise.
100%. The South Korea are showing very positive signs of going in the right direction. So please God, we'll be able to do the same in the UK and in Ireland. Be safe, be well, physically and mentally, and hopefully you enjoyed this episode of the Final Furlong Podcast. We'll be back with more next week as we look ahead to Maidan with Barry Faulkner and Peter Fornatel, and we're hoping to do a show on Monday as well with Sarah Lynham and Peter Fornatel. So until then, from James Norris.
Take care, everyone.
From Rory DeLargy.
Keep well. Speak soon.
Be safe. Be kind to others. And mind yourself. We'll talk to you soon. God bless.
Will it happen or won't it happen? You can bet on it with the Betfair Exchange, proud sponsors of the Final Furlong Podcast.
Have you downloaded the free At The Races app yet? With easy-to-use race cards and form, expert daily tips, plus video replays and in-app betting, it's the app that no racing fan's phone should be without. Available for free on your iPhone or Android mobile, visit attheraces.com/app for more details.